everybody, and Hello. Welcome to the Macabre Podcast Universe.
Yes.
My name is Michael
McCabe. I'm Jordan.
And
we exist to prove people wrong when they say SEALs are never really real.
That's exactly why we exist. And we've been going through these movies, Planet of the Apes. We watched 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then in 2001, they said, you liked 1968's Planet of the Apes, but we're going to do it again. With the twisted mind, twisted imagination of Tim Burton. So what else could we do but bring on the twisted imagination of Jeremy Eden? Jeremy Eden returns to the pod. Hello, Jeremy.
Hello, sir. Hello, Jordan.
Hello.
Tim Burton fanatic for a long time in my life, too. So Tim, and defender of this movie for a long stretch of my life. Do I still feel that way?
I guess we're going to find out.
Wow. Okay.
I haven't seen this movie. Gosh, I mean, prior to watching for this show, the last time I saw it was over 15 years ago. I remember doing a big Tim Burton watch through of his whole filmography up to that point. And I think it was right around the time that Alice in Wonderland came out.
Yeah.
And I was like able to defend everything. Like, you know, like this was certainly a panned movie. And I was able to defend it back then, along with any other Mars Attacks. I was like, Mars Attacks is great. I don't care what anyone says. Mars Attacks is awesome. And then, you know, other, the filmography escapes me at this point. But then we got to Alice in Wonderland and I was like, I cannot. It broke. Alice in Wonderland broke me to the point where I was like, I have nothing. I can't defend.
It broke
this.
Micah too.
That and is,
we're watching through.
That is a movie that I can very, very quickly think of as like, I can't think of an example of a worse movie. If I think of Alice in Wonderland, because it's like, I also take into account like having a budget and being like this famous and making a movie that bad at that level.
But then for me,
crazy.
That came out when we were in high school and I loved Alice in Wonderland always. That was my favorite Disney movie. And then, oh my gosh, my favorite director is making Alice in Wonderland, the twisted mind of. So I loved the movie.
Imagination.
Imagination. So I remember really liking it in high school and it's not a good movie.
No, but it's tough. It's
I have
tough.
Nostalgia for it.
No sure. Nostalgia it's, is strong enough for something like that, Jordan.
It's one of those pairings that feels it's too on the nose, like Tim Burton and Alice in Wonderland. So, of course, it didn't work. Something about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, too, is like, well, it feels like it should work. But, of course, that doesn't work either. And then, you know, Alice in Wonderland, there's just, you gotta, it's amazing that Wednesday worked because you just gotta keep him away from like, don't put the Tim Burton spin on anything, you know, like just don't do it anymore. Just have him, let him create his own thing or go back to Beetlejuice.
but the weird thing is, you know, he can't, when it hits, it hits. I mean, we have him to thank for Batman, you know?
Right. I'm saying,
but now you're saying now.
From the point of this movie forward.
Yes. This is a good demarcation point
on something doesn't work.
True.
Anymore.
Well, and to put it into perspective, I wanted to hit you with his last. So we have covered on the show, Batman and Batman Returns.
Yeah.
After Batman Returns, he goes on to make Ed Wood. A movie in which the first time I saw it, I thought, this is boring. It's terrible. I watched it a second time, and I was like, I love this. This is fantastic. One of his best, actually, I would say. Then he makes Mars Attacks, which I didn't love, but I kind of get the love for it. And I wonder what a rewatch would do for that. It's a wacky movie.
I think a rewatch, it's the perfect amount of, like, it's almost the perfect amount of stupid in a Tim Burton movie.
Yeah. And then he does Sleepy Hollow.
Right before this one.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's that movie I think is fine, but it's got
like
a lot of cool like sets and stuff. There's enough cool that I'm still there on the Burton train.
Yeah.
Then he makes this movie.
Uh-huh.
And then he will make Big Fish, which Big Fish is good.
Yeah.
Oh, one of my favorites.
That's a great movie.
That is a 90 over 90 title. For sure, that'll eventually be something we cover on our show.
Yeah. But he makes this movie, and I was relieved to find, because, you know, we've talked about Burton a lot on this podcast, and I do love Tim Burton, but he can be, for some, it's weird to love someone so much and, like, truly hate a lot of the stuff that they've made.
Well, I think that's, like a big thing that we've discussed about him is his biggest issue is when you remove limitation from him. Like, you can do anything you want, Tim. Here's all the truckloads of money. Here's everybody that you need to work with, blah, 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 blah. And it's just not good.
Yeah, it's like he doesn't have anything to say when that happens. And so this movie is one of those movies, I think. I've seen this before when we were going through and watching every Tim Burton movie, much like you. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is one of the more boring movies I've ever seen. Oh, and I hated it so much. And I had got it from this place called swapadvd.com. You know, where you get one, then you swap and all that stuff. And so I got it. And I remember getting on Instagram like the next day and like begging like someone to take this movie from me. Cause I was like, I do not want to own this. And so I got rid of it. I don't know how. I think I maybe just put it in like a local, like those library things. Yeah, or I may have actually put it in the slot at the library. Okay. I just wanted to get rid of it.
Okay.
And then I was relieved to see that it was on Hulu. So we were able to watch it and didn't have to rent it this time. Because I did go through, because I was like, did I get rid of that movie? And I was like rummaging through the garage, like trying to find Planet of the Apes like a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And then we watched it again last night. Mm-hmm. That's my Planet of the Apes.
Same, minus that.
The rummaging?
Yeah, minus the rummaging and the manic depositing parts at the library. But pretty much the same.
So, Jeremy, what is your experience with the franchise Planet of the Apes? I'm curious.
Minimal, honestly. I remember our dad showing us the original movie when we were younger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably circa 10 years old or something like that. And being like, okay, it's fine. You know, like we were too young to appreciate it as a classic.
Yeah.
But it was also, I remember not hating it. We did watch the entirety of the movie. And I remember being like, okay, like thinking it was kind of boring. But for the most part being like, I'm cool with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, did not see this movie in theaters. I know that there's a theater connected story to that. And it's probably like Dan went to go see it and I didn't I don't remember. I remember there was something. I think Dan saw this in the theater and I did not. But I do remember seeing it eventually.
Why are you on this episode? Why didn't we get Dan?
Well, because I told Micah originally I had a take on this, much like BVS.
Right.
Yeah.
Classic Macabre Podcast Universe episode.
Yeah.
Listen to our Batman v Superman episode, folks.
So I had I originally had a take and I don't think it holds up quite as much. Well, what's interesting is, in fact, I won't even wait until the end. No. I'm gonna save it. Okay, trust me. Now you got me so distracted. What are we even talking about?
Your first experience, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
No, my take.
I was like,
what the fuck are we talking about for a second? So my take on it, I'm not going to save it at the end like I did for BVS. My take on this originally, I didn't have quite the language for it that I do now. So I've modified it slightly and it sort of holds up. But to me, this movie plays like the recent string of live action Disney animated adaptations, live action adaptations of I'm going to say it concisely. This movie is a live action adaptation of a Disney movie that doesn't exist.
Oh.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Because when I watched it during that stretch, there was a certain point of the movie, and I can't even remember what point it was, but I was like, oh, if you watch this movie like it's intended explicitly for kids, this movie plays great.
Uh-huh.
But as an adult, you're like, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I wish I could remember specifically what point it was, because I could, like, I was so freaking bored this time. Honestly the biggest crime that this movie commits now. Because everything about this movie, and I'm sure you're going to get into the details about it, but everything about this movie works on paper and even works in photo, you know? But I mean, when you put it all together as a movie.
The costumes are insane.
The costumes, the makeup, the performance, that like the ape acting in this movie is incredible.
It's crazy.
The sets are amazing. The score is, it's fine. It's not Danny Elfman's best, but it's fine. And yeah, like everything should work about this movie. And yet it is a slog.
Yeah.
Such a slog. Yeah. More boring than the original.
Well, and it commits a huge crime that you know, at least one other director, M. Night Shyamalan, is guilty of, which is hiring someone named Mark Wahlberg who wants to beat up nerds all the time as a nerd. And that is something you cannot do.
Yeah.
You cannot have him being like, oh, I think I... No, that's Keanu. Oh, what's a... You know, you can do a Wahlberg, right?
It's like, yeah, I could do a Wahlberg, yeah. He's just got to do a Boston accent, that's
yeah.
all.
Yeah,
you
okay.
gotta sound like, what the hell's going on?
What's going on? Okay.
You gotta sound like you're coming into you're coming into the room of two boys who are making a lot of noise,
yeah.
and it doesn't sound pleasant. And you're like, hey, what's going on in here?
That's
yeah,
true.
What are we doing? Okay, I don't
what's
know.
What's going on?
I guess I'm making a lot of noise in here. Oh, this guy's
taking a nap
nerds.
In the other room.
So, you know. I think
wake
that
your mother up.
That is like the worst thing that you can do. And the other, you know, if in case anyone's not remembering, he's a science teacher in The Happening. This is a man who I'm sure has seen someone with a science book and punched him in the face and screamed
100%.
Nerd at them in high school.
It's like, have you ever? I was gonna say, have you ever picked up a science book? He's like, yeah, to beat somebody up with. Yeah, he used it as a blunt force object.
Yeah. So
that is the biggest crime in this movie. I would say the next one is you're making a Planet of the Apes movie and there's no take when all of them
are
clear on, like, they're all so philosophical.
Yeah.
Especially the first one. So if you're going to remake the first one and not even talk about, like, classes.
Religion.
Science. Institutions.
Anything?
And how they
anything?
Lie to you. Like, it's nothing like that at all.
It's,
Another big issue for me. I know for you too, is all the humans talked.
Oh, I hated
and
that.
There was,
I hated that.
I hated it so much.
So one thing I do want to mention for our eagle-eared listeners is our baby is being taken care of. She's just teething really hard and having a rough night, but she is being watched. We're, you know, don't worry.
You think that'll be picked up?
I think it definitely will be picked up. I'm hearing it pretty clearly in my headphones, and I think Jeremy is hearing it as well. So,
you know what? I do. And to me, the sound of a crying baby is just like soothing music.
White noise.
It no longer is stands out to me as something like, oh, like put that needs to stop. I'm just like, oh yeah, that'll eventually stop on its
own. That baby's alive.
She's doing fine. She's doing great. Fine. So let me kind of get into some of the production, because this is going to unlock the movie in a lot of ways. I was kind of happy that though this is a hated movie, after reading about the production, I don't think Tim Burton is to blame for what we got.
Okay.
So.
there's some things he's to blame for.
Okay. But I mean, the ultimate product, anyway, we'll get into it. We'll get there. We have to go through the drafts of other movies that were almost made that all sound 100% more exciting than this movie. So the screenplay is by William Broyles Jr., who did Apollo 13 and Castaway. Lawrence Connor, who did some Sopranos, Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and his partner, Mark Rosenthal. The cinematography is by Philip Rosalette, who is a Burton guy, a David Yates guy, and a Guy Ritchie guy. He's a guy. Music is by Danny Elfman. The movie comes out in July of 2001. Forgot to get the actual date, but that's okay. July 2001. A $100 million budget. It makes $180 in the U.S., makes $362 worldwide. That's a hit.
Yeah.
But here's what happened. Adam Rifkin is a director, and he makes this movie called Never Tuesday. And Fox goes up to him, and they go, what do you want to do? And he says, I love Planet of the Apes, 1968. I want to make a sequel to the first movie.
Interesting.
So instead of Beneath the Planet of the Apes, He would do that.
Oh, they were doing that way back then. Still,
yeah.
I forgot I thought that was a more recent trend.
Well, I don't know if anyone actually did it, you know, but someone had the idea to do it.
The design, yeah, maybe we're like, people aren't ready for that. We can't do a sequel to a movie that's got five other movies. July 27th, by the way.
July 27th. Thank you so much. Yeah. So here's what's cool about this movie. It was going to be, the apes were now at the Roman Empire era. Okay. And it was going to be a Sword and Sandals Planet of the Apes movie.
Yeah, sure.
Love it. I want to see it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah. And it got fast-tracked. Rick Baker was hired for prosthetic makeup. Danny Elfman was apparently going to compose. Tom Cruise and Charlie Sheen were in contention for the lead role. Which is wild to think of Cruise or Charlie Sheen, for that matter, in an ape movie. But we have... The director saying, I can't accurately describe in words the utter euphoria I felt knowing that I, Adam Rifkin, was going to be resurrecting the Planet of the Apes. It all seemed...
Okay, buddy, calm down.
Well, listen.
Take a cold shower, buddy.
Well, yeah. let me finish the quote, because he says, it all seemed too good to be true. I soon found out it was.
Okay.
New executives come in.
Okay.
And they go, rewrite this. He leaves over creative differences.
Okay.
Because it's not happening. Then another ape story comes into the fray. Now, I'm glad it didn't happen because of what we will get, but I'm sad this didn't happen because this is also cool. Peter Jackson and Fran Walsh pitch a Apes in the Renaissance story. The Renaissance period.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, God, I would love that.
The ape government becomes concerned over the new artworks. The humans are revolting, and the liberal apes shelter a half-human, half-ape from the gorillas.
What?
Roddy McDowall was enthusiastic about their proposal and agreed to play the Leonardo da Vinci-type character they had written for him.
Roddy McDowall.
He's Caesar in the original movies.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Wow. But then we wouldn't get Lord of the Rings.
Right. However, the executive... Jackson spoke to was not a fan of the series and unaware of McDowell's involvement, and so Peter Jackson works on Heavenly Creatures.
There's an executive that's involved in the Planet of the Apes and he is not a fan of them?
He doesn't know who Roddy McDowell is in it.
Whatever.
Yeah. By the way, there was someone at my... I was playing at a tap house the other day, playing a set of music, and I saw a guy and I was like, I know Roddy Piper's dead, but I think Roddy Piper's at the show.
Whoa. Very cool.
Just forgot to tell you that. And he did kick the door in, and he said, I'm here to chew some bubble gum and kick some ass, and I'm all out of bubble gum.
Yeah, okay. When you said who he was my
30
first
seconds ago.
For some reason, that you were talking about the guy that's been playing Cornelius in this series.
Nope.
Roddy McDowall?
Roddy Piper who I thought I saw, but he's dead.
Yeah, but you didn't say Piper.
I said, didn't I say
you
Roddy?
You said McDowell a minute ago.
No, you said Piper.
Oh, okay. Okay, but the other actor's name is McDowell.
Yeah, Roddy McDowell.
Okay, now that's... I don't feel as crazy.
it was the Roddy connection.
Yeah.
And I just knew I had to tell you. I just forgot. And he just kind of stared off at me with like those dead eyes that also...
Like in Sunny?
Yeah, a little bit like that. Like, my kids... Just staring. Okay. But that movie does not come to fruition. And so in 93, who do you talk to in 93 about a Planet of the Apes movie? Oliver Stone, of course.
Oh, okay.
And he said this movie was, he brought on Terry Hayes to write it, and it was called Return of the Planet of the Apes. Just Return of the Apes. And it was set in the near future. A plague is making humans extinct. Geneticist Will Robinson discovers the plague is a genetic time bomb embedded in the Stone Age. He time travels with a pregnant colleague named Billy Ray Diamond to a time when Paleolithic humans were at war for the future of the planet with highly evolved apes.
That's a lot.
Oh, I'm not done. The ape supreme commander is a gorilla named Drac. Robinson and Billy Ray discover a young human girl named Ive, pronounced Eve, to be the next step in evolution. It is revealed that it was the apes that created the virus to destroy the human race. They protect her from the virus, thus ensuring the survival of the human race. 102,000 years later, Billy Ray gives birth to a baby boy named Adam. Okay, that one sounds maybe worse than this one.
Ew, that's a lot.
It sounds loaded.
Yeah.
maybe the guy who's like conspiracy theorist extraordinaire is not the guy to make a Planet of the Apes movie. So then in 94, that script is floating around and Arnold Schwarzenegger's like, right on, I'm ready to be in this movie.
Okay.
And Don Murphy, who's an executive at Fox.
I'm just imagining like Arnold Schwarzenegger just trying to, because it's like, you know, the original movie, they learn that it's basically that they're in America, you know, like he's literally the Statue of Liberty. And just to be Arnold, like, yo, man, the axe.
Yeah, well.
Assuming he would give that. The exact same speech at the end, yeah. The you know, the same lines. You blow it up.
You damn dirty apes.
Stinking paws off me.
So Don Murphy says that Terry wrote a Terminator and Fox wanted the Flintstones. And that's part of why this project starts falling apart. He's got a serious, intense movie and Fox keeps asking them to add things. So Dylan Sellers, another Fox exec, talks to Murphy and he says, what if Robinson, a character in the movie, finds himself in Apeland and the apes are trying to play...
Apeland?
Yeah, that's what he says. This is a quote. What if Robinson finds himself in Apeland and the apes are trying to play baseball, but they're missing one element, like the pitcher or something? Sellers continues, Robinson knows what they're missing out and he shows them and they all start playing.
Stop it.
Oh my God, the inspirational coach movie with apes? That'd be great too. I'm for that. You guys could think that's ridiculous. I would be all for it. Somebody lands there and they're just like, they're a bunch of apes and then they just accept it. And they're just like, what's my role, coach? All right. Do the job. Take them to the championship.
Like, why are they playing in the first place if they don't have like a pitcher? You know, like what is this movie?
The executive says that's for you to figure out.
Well, but here's the thing. Sellers refused to give up his baseball scene, and when Hayes turned in the next script, sans baseball, Sellers fired him.
Oh my God.
And so, you know,
you know what? Smart move too. How dare you take out the baseball element? That's the best part. It's like changing the title of Snakes on a Plane. What are you doing?
So, you know, that part falls apart. And then all these, you know, it keeps changing hands. And eventually it gets to Chris Columbus.
Okay.
That makes sense.
It does, yeah.
And Murphy, the director, one of the producers said, after they got rid of us, that batch of people, they brought on Chris Columbus. Then I heard they did tests of ape skiing, which didn't make much sense. So Columbus brings on Sam Hamm, who writes this script. An ape astronaut from another planet crash landing in New York Harbor, launching a virus that will make human beings extinct. Dr. Susan Landis, who worked for the CDC, and Alexander Troy, an Area 51 scientist, used the ape spacecraft to return to the virus planet of origin, hoping to find an antidote. They find an urban environment where apes armed with heavy weapons hunt humans. The main villain was Lord Zaius, in contrast to Dr. Zaius. Lord Zaius was very cruel to the humans. Landis and Troy discover the antidote and return to Earth, only to find in their 74-year absence the apes have taken over the planet. The Statue of Liberty, once proud porcelain features, have been crudely chiseled into the grotesque likeness of a great grinning ape.
Okay, that's better than this movie.
Yeah, is that what happened in this movie then?
No.
Did they?
Oh, with the Abraham Lincoln thing?
Did the apes carve that out of Abraham Lincoln? Is that?
No, that's not my interpretation.
Same.
Okay. Well, we're going to do probably 2.5 hours on the last like four shots of this movie because I have a lot of questions. So then Columbus drops out. He makes Jingle All the Way.
I'm sorry. I find that very interesting that Columbus brings in Sam Hamm and that this eventually, because Sam Hamm wrote Batman and Batman Returns, or at least Batman.
Okay. Oh, I forget that.
So I just find that interesting. That,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't a Tim Burton connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he drops out, makes Jingle All the Way. Roland Emmerich is going to make it now. And then they start talking to Cameron. Cameron's filming Titanic. Titanic becomes a huge hit. He doesn't make it.
He's king of the world.
Michael Bay turns it down. Peter Jackson turns it down a second time. And then William Broyles Jr. writes a script that Burton reads, and he's like, this is cool. I kind of want to make this. So he comes on, and Broyles writes another draft, more money conscious, because his first draft was like, would have been a $200 million budget.
Oh, okay.
He slashed that in half. And then 2 months before filming, the studio brings on Connor and Rosenthal to start rewriting this.
Okay.
2 months before filming. So that's tough. One possible ending was that he would crash land at a Yankees game, so you'd get the baseball.
All for it.
But here's where it starts going bad. Fox,
the baseball announcer in the box. I love the image in my head right now. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll get to some ape stuff here. But Fox is adamant, even though they're rewriting the script. Like, they're adamant for a July 2001 release date. They are not going to move it. So this makes the project so terrible for Burton that he says this, asked years later if he would ever make a sequel. He says, quote, I'd rather jump out a window.
Wow. Okay.
During filming, while they're making the sets, they're still rewriting the script. And he just has, no time to make this movie, so pre-productions, like rush, post-production, the and
Hobbit
the filming
situation.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah. But on a more fun note, Burton insists on prosthetics. The studio is like, we could maybe do CGI, and he's like, let's do prosthetics, which seems so unusual for him to suggest that in this point in our lives.
He hasn't gone there yet.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, he's only done Mars Attacks Aliens up to this point, really.
Yeah, and Mars Attacks was by necessity because the stop motion wasn't going to work for that.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to think because
Sleepy Hollow, I bet there's a little CG in
there's
that.
There's a little bit, but
it's not
nothing
very. Oh, but
it's an enhancement.
Especially when his head grows back.
Yeah.
That's the big money shot.
That's tasteful.
Honestly, it's I think it's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory where he really starts to get into the more CG stuff. And I was watching that recently with my kids. I was not to divert too much, but I watched, thank God, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory first.
Yeah.
Jack loved it.
Good.
And then, he loved the Chocolate Factory part. He did not want to watch anything before they got to the factory. So yeah. I just skipped right to it.
And then I put sense. On the It's a common problem with the movie. Not a
and
problem,
then I put
but...
on the Tim Burton one just because I'm desperate for new content in the house, even if it is rewatching Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and he loved that too. But then I was watching that and I was like, oh my God, this looks this is a CG mess with when Violet turns into the blueberry.
Oh.
It just looks terrible. But so I think that's when it really starts to go offhill.
Yeah.
Hey, you might be right. Because I think Big Fish has a fair amount of CG, but you're in this weird fantasy that it does work. Any of the CG I can remember works. But I also think it's mostly practical stuff.
Yeah, just the important stuff is practical. You know, it's with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory that the important stuff becomes CG as opposed to a practical effect. Because he could have done Violet practically and it would have been interesting. But
I mean, they've done it once before.
Yeah.
What?
It didn't happen.
Sorry, but then
to take that tangent.
No, please. Just a couple more things. The makeup took did I already say this?
No.
2 to 4.5 hours to put on and 1 hour to remove.
Jeez.
The actors attended ape school.
Okay.
To learn how to be like the apes.
And it shows.
Yeah. This is his last movie with Lisa Murray. And I believe it's his first with Helena Bonham Carter.
Okay.
And he does a quick old switcheroo.
In classic Tim Burton fashion.
And then around Dark Shadows, I think he does switcheroo too.
Eva Green.
Yep. It's so interesting how that, for some directors, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
Those things. Because the only other one I can think of right now is Quentin Tarantino and Feet, which I think he needs us to know that.
Yeah.
But,
I just find it funny that Tim Burton always trades sideways. It's not it's always just that seems a very lateral move. But okay.
But HBC just felt the perfect combo, he's trading down for Eva, especially as far as acting goes.
Well,
Because one is good at acting and the other one isn't. That's my point, Jeremy.
you're right. You're right.
One of them's good in Casino Royale and that's it. And the other one's good in almost everything, but maybe sometimes just a little too weird for the project. You know, we're big HBC heads. You know, that's why we call her HBC instead of Helena.
Yeah, I get it. Hey.
Although she's not very good in this.
I honestly, I don't know what the fuck she's doing in this movie. Yeah. She is doing some weird stuff in this movie. Like everyone else, when I said it shows on everyone but her. I do not know what her choices are.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure.
It's very odd.
I also feel like her makeup looked the worst out of everyone's.
Yeah.
And I don't really know why or like what the thought process was and the design. I don't know what.
Yeah.
But she did not look as good.
Yeah, arguably they make her look prettier than the other, like,
sure,
but like, you know, like that's debatable, I guess. It's still like heavy makeup.
You can't even like figure out the sentence because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And just move on.
No, it is weird. I think they are trying to, I think there is something to that because they try to do a love triangle in this movie, which is one of the more inexplicable things maybe I've ever seen.
Stupid.
It's like, I've said this before, there's like so many movies wherein they shoehorn some type of love subplot that I'm just like, you don't need to do, like, it's such a fallback so often in movies where there's like this romantic subplot that most of the time is just like, you could do fine without this. This is completely unnecessary.
People are not here for the love triangle.
No.
Yeah. No.
It's not so but so.
I think it's HBC's performance that kind of gave me the, is like, oh yeah, this is like a performance for children. Like,
yeah,
it's very, it's very big for a kid, I guess, you know?
Yeah. Oh man. Well, speaking of that, why don't you tell us about these actors, Jordan?
Oh yeah, I forgot. I gotta look at that.
Oh my gosh, you forgot your one
I'm looking
job.
At Never on Tuesday, the movie you talked about forever ago.
Did it look good?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know.
I mean, people know who Mark Wahlberg is. Come on.
Okay.
I mean, he just did a quick guest appearance on the pod, so
we've covered Tim Roth and Hulk.
That's true.
Have we covered HBC before?
Terminator, Harry Potter.
Terminator and Harry Potter. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, duh. Michael Clark Duncan. I don't think so.
No.
We're
still waiting for them to make two more sequels to Green Mile.
Well, he's gone. So that's not going to happen.
But yeah, Green Mile.
Greener Mile and Greenest Mile. It's sitting right there, producers.
He's also in Sin City, Armageddon. So many things.
Talladega Nights, Whole Nine Yards, two great movies that he's in. He's awesome. It's a shame we lost him.
Yeah, he was great. Oh, wow. I realized I had something on my mic and I turned it off and now it's fixed. Great.
Cool.
That's where I've been today. Didn't even check the mic situation.
Paul Giamatti, I don't think we've talked about.
Paul Giamatti in this movie, I don't know if I've seen a more Giamatti performance. And this is a man who's full of Giamatti performances.
I think I would agree with that.
It is unbelievable what they let him do in this movie.
He looked so good, though. He looked crazy.
He looked great. He looked great.
I don't think there is anyone more appropriate to play a disgusting orangutan than Paul Giamatti. He's pitch perfect.
Now, do you have a Giamatti?
I have multiple Giamattis. You know, there's basic Giamatti, but he talks like this, you know, but
that's so good.
There's also, I was listening, I've been going through my old episodes too, just scrubbing them for things that I need to remove for the future. And have you guys ever seen the movie Shoot 'Em Up?
No.
It's this ridiculous action movie from like 2007 or something like that. One of the, again, Clive Owen is like the main character.
Oh, yeah.
One of those like crank style, like high energy, like, you know, Mountain Dew extreme type of action movie. And he's got this performance in there that feels like he's doing like a version of Jeff Goldblum meets like William Shatner. And it's like, he's got this delivery that's very American bullshit.
and like, insane.
I did it. I fell into it so much in the episode that like I started on the way home. I was just talking to myself for no reason at all. Like, Paul Giamatti's rhythm. It's just, oh, I see we're here at a red light. Are we going to stop now? it's a voice that's too fun to do, so I have to stop myself because that, otherwise I will go upstairs. My wife will be like, how'd it go? I'd be like, oh, it was a great episode.
We might have to release our first ever video from the podcast so people can see that experience.
I never look at my own face. I don't know how I look when I'm doing these impressions. Oh, jeez. There's a lot of jaw work when you're working GMI.
Oh my gosh, so much.
I don't know if you have ever heard any old comedy Bang Bangs with James Adomian being Paul Giamatti.
No, I can't say that I have.
But it's just so funny. He just comes on and
he's such a loser.
He nails it, and he's always like, "Oh yeah, I'm the big schlub. Oh okay, couldn't get a big role in this. Oh great, I'm just the pig in this movie too. Oh, they wanted me to be fat this time. Oh, what a big surprise." He just kind of talks over everybody.
Like honestly, a second into what you were saying, I'm like, I totally get the comedy premise of this. This is great. I love it. I should listen to it.
It's so funny.
I see. this defensive, like, yeah. That's great.
So that's Paul Giamatti.
I'm sweating now.
Estella Warren.
Sorry.
Who plays Dina? Something?
Huh? Yeah, the blonde chick who can't keep her mouth closed in the movie.
I mean, yeah. What? Yeah.
Oh.
The other love triangle, the other
who's
corner
in,
of it.
What? Oh, yeah, you're about
she's
to
in,
do it.
She's in Kangaroo Jack.
Oh, yeah, that which we covered on 90 Under 90.
I listened to that recently, too.
Wow, this cover of Beauty and the Beast is like the boobiest cover I've ever seen. I think it's actually the boobiest one I've ever seen.
So would you call them Beauty or the Beast?
I call them Booby and the Beast. She's also in Driven, The Beginning, a lot of bad things.
Yeah.
Just a lot of terrible things.
A lot of bad things.
Kroll is played by Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa. He was with HBC the whole time. That big gorilla.
Oh, yeah.
I liked this guy. He's in Mortal Kombat, Tekken, License to Kill, Blue Eye Samurai, and more. David Warner plays Senator Sandar.
Yeah, is he Omen or Exorcist?
Let's look it up.
David Warner?
I think it's Omen.
I don't.
The Omen.
Okay.
Oh, is he a doctor?
I know him. I know him from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze.
Ah, yes.
And I guess Titanic too, but Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that's the more important thing that I know him from.
Now that's a franchise we have yet to cover, and I've only seen the new animated movie that came out last summer. That was my first TMNT experience across any format ever.
I say, even if you don't choose to cover the series, watch the original 1990. It's a great, one of the best comic book like adaptations.
It's like they're real, like they're in costume. Yeah. I think I really liked that as a kid.
Yeah.
I remember liking that. And this guy's also a Doctor Who.
Oh, and he's in Tron, which we just watched.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, he's like the bad guy.
Yeah, he's the system.
That's it.
That's what I'm recognizing him from. But I did know Omen.
We've covered Chris Christopherson because of Blade.
We have, yes. Which they decided, hey, Chris Christopherson, look exactly like you do in Blade. Perfect.
No
you got
problem.
The point.
I can do that. Easy as pie.
And I mean, let's just stop it there. That's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot.
That's pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Deep Roy. You gonna talk about
who, him? Who was he in the movie?
Who?
He was the little kid.
Yeah,
ape
he was a little
like,
kid.
The kid,
the
ape.
Little
oh, okay.
Sassy little kid. I mean, so his voice is dubbed over, but
yeah.
Oh, it is okay. Because I love Deep Roy. He's great. He's always great in everything. But
Mr. Soggy Bottom in Big Fish.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was in The Neverending Story.
Oh,
fun. Anyway,
and you know he is. I mean, like it or not, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, he's bringing it in that movie. He rocks in that movie.
Oh, he brings it hard.
Yeah.
Wow, look at this guy's IMDb picture.
Oh, my gosh. Just
a
guy
underwear
in his
model?
Underwear. Was he in this movie?
Yep.
Well, if anyone wants to look it up, tell them who it is.
He's a Red Ape Soldier, Chad Bannon.
Yeah, Chad Bannon. Little eye candy for those who want it. All right, let's jump right into this movie. The movie begins. We have a cool credit sequence. I like when movies have credit sequences. Yes. Bring them back.
Tim Burton trademark. I don't know if I can't remember if I've watched any recent Tim Burton movies, but.
You didn't see 2018's Dumbo?
I did, but only once, and I don't remember the opening. I don't remember if there were opening credits, but.
I don't remember either. I saw that movie, and I think I had Movie Pass back then, and so.
I still have never seen that movie.
I had fun watching it because it was free.
I think that's my last one, too.
I think that's the only one you haven't seen.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, compared to Bad Burton, it's like the best of the Bad Burtons. But
yeah, I just don't want to watch it.
It's also boring, you know, and it's kind of like, why am I not just watching the animated movie? Which
Well, that's any dot live action thing.
Yeah. So that happens. And then we're introduced to a space station. And this movie falls into a classic remake issue where we, the audience, You didn't decide to tell a new story. It's a remake. So we, the audience, know what happens in the movie. And there's plenty of good remakes. I'm not advocating for no remakes. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is don't spend all of your time on the parts of the remake that aren't interesting to us.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the first movie just starts, they crash land within, like, 2 minutes. This
More
movie
or less, yeah.
spends like 10 minutes of them like
Too long.
Establishing the space station, and there's all these apes in it. And I do get that they have to establish the apes are there, but you're spending all of this time and it's like, yeah, we know. Get to the apes. Let's go.
Yeah.
There's been 5 Planet of the Apes movies. We know that there's a Planet of Apes. I want to see the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
And of course, what they should have done, even if they're remaking the movie, at least just change the setting. Like, make it like they go there and it's like 80s New York or something like that. Like, just change the setting and you could have like the same script and it at least be something different for mm-hmm. us to look at
mm-hmm.
Instead of just nicer sets than 1968, but mm-hmm. the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but see, in 2001, the whole idea is just like, but look, do you know what the tree houses would look like if Tim Burton drew them?
That's so true, though. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's all it is.
That's so true.
I mean, what if apes in Gotham City, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so in this movie, they eliminated the Dr. Zaius character, the Zira character, Cornelius, which are that's a terrible choice.
Yeah.
Even if you wanted to go like new characters, new route or something, I just feel like if you're going to do a remake, the element from the first one that's so interesting is you have apes studying and dissecting and trying to learn from humans that they have enslaved and have turned into pets.
Mm-hmm.
And they're savages.
Yeah.
And then you get one that's smart that can talk. And this is just like, no, all the humans can talk.
Yeah. And
there's no one studying them. It's just apes are just ruling them. I don't know. It's like so black and white.
Yeah. And you know, I think like the big problem with this movie is it has like nothing to say about, like, you're adapting the original movie, even though it says like based on the novel, like there's that relationship. And it's not like saying anything about the 1968 movie. It's not saying anything about the novel. It's just, it's stuck between like, we do want to be an original movie, but we don't have like enough faith in this premise or something, or we want to like start a new franchise, but with like the same plot, just with a couple of differences.
They didn't even. So
I
like,
just don't even get what they were attempting to do with this story.
But they didn't even like. I feel like something that could have been easy is the beginning of this movie when we're introduced to Mark Wahlberg and how they treat apes, where they're like training them, and you know he like tricks the ape like there's nothing in his hand, and he's like, "Oh, I'm training him," and she's like, "No, you're teasing him." And then that there's no like, not that there necessarily needs to be all the time, but like there's no payoff to that later where like he's on the ape, where he's in the Planet of the Apes, and. They're doing something like that to humans.
Right.
To see that, like, I don't know, history repeats itself or whatever you want to say. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and go ahead.
All the humans are, you know, enslaved in this. So the movie doesn't have the guts to do any kind of slavery story, though it is just kind of like a slave escape story. But like, with my limited knowledge of Planet of the Apes, I understood even in 2001, like, no, this movie requires a certain amount of philosophical parallel, Like, that's what, like, yeah. This is like the definition of science fiction, you know, like that's what you have to do.
Exactly.
So this movie doesn't, it doesn't know what it wants to say. It doesn't really have anything to say that's deep about it. You know, it is just, it's Mark Wahlberg who gets there. He's just like, I want to leave. And that's it. Mm-hmm. Like the whole time, it's like 2 hours of like, I got to go.
Well, and you would think, you know, like at the very least, it's not the most unanimously philosophical as the previous five movies, but you would think like at least Tim Burton would take an angle of like, what if you're an outsider?
Yeah, like his most like classic
all of
thing,
his movies, you know, and it's like, you're an outsider, but it's like, no, you're also like these other humans that are here.
Yeah.
And it's like, what if make that change? He's the only human and they've never seen one before or something like that. I don't know. Like there's so many things you could do. A baseball game, but they don't have a pitcher, for example.
No, the poetic answer is you get like you hire Mark Wahlberg because he is a hard ass guy who's should be like kind of a jerk and treats the apes when he arrives like jerks and then realizes the apes are more human than he is.
Oh,
story.
There's your movie.
Easy. Boom.
Yeah, that's it.
And then he learns a lesson. He goes back and he's more gentle to the chimp that he sends in there.
And then maybe because of that or not because of that, the future doesn't happen. You know, humans prevail or something.
I also think they're like, this is going to be, you know, Planet of the Apes alternate world, you know, series. Here we go.
Yeah. The producers are just like, they're just like, yeah. But the tree houses are going to look cool if Tim Burton draws them.
Just give him a piece of paper and a pencil. Have we done that yet?
So
why are we wasting time with pre-production? He's an artist. He should just draw it.
Do it on
set. Wasting
time. So I do want to point out that they literally, I think Apple owes Tim Burton money or something because AirPods are what they drive. Those
so
chips
fly,
are fly. They are AirPods. They're like the exact shape. It's crazy.
But okay, so there's some wormhole situation and they send Pericles, the chimp, out there.
Yeah.
He gets lost and they're like, we're not going to send another one out. We're not going to waste another ship, which that's a whole other thing where humans don't like this human doesn't even value the life of a chimp. And they don't even do anything there with it.
Yeah.
But then Mark Wahlberg's like, well, I'm going to go save him. And then he also gets caught in the wormhole. Finally, we're on the planet.
Yeah. And then he runs into a gorilla who says, take your hand off me, you damn dirty human.
Yeah.
Which is the opposite of the first movie.
Yeah, we get that.
A classic trope that I love that they do.
Jeremy doesn't mind.
Oh, okay. That's good.
I really don't mind that. No, you can hate it. I'm going to defend, I'm going to root for the underdog in that situation. I don't mind the slightest bit of the couple slight bits of fan service that this movie actually has.
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, in a movie that this bare thin, it gives you something.
I think it's fan service done well, honestly, like. I don't know, when you're using the same quote that's like a lot of times those quotes are just kind of like thrown in there and they don't always contextually work the same way. So if you're flipping it on its head, you know, there's another use for it. And then Charlton Heston.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, that's fun. And he looks like an ape, too. And you know that Charlton Heston had to sit through 4 hours of makeup, too.
Well, yeah, okay, so just to jump to that
who
really
you,
quick.
Who are you, Charlton Heston?
When we were watching it last night, he gives his whole speech monologue thing. And I joked and said, it's so crazy that they got Charlton Heston to sit under makeup for this. And Micah said, really, it's him. And I was like, oh, I'm joking. I don't think he'd do that.
Yeah, I didn't recognize him because he wasn't doing his knowledge. That's my one word impression I can do. Knowledge.
I don't have a Charlton Heston.
Yeah, that's it. I can't do any other words, but he says that so much in the first Ape movie, and I just nailed it. And now it's locked in. That's my only impression.
But yeah, they got this guy to sit under makeup, a guy that's like 7 years from death.
Yeah.
Crazy. That's crazy.
I did read that Tim Roth was upset to work with him because I guess he's a big NRA guy.
Charlton Heston is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then
or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Oh, was he? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
From Moses to the NRA. But he, and I think even since then he said, like, I wouldn't have done the movie if I knew I was going to work with him.
Wow. Okay.
It's pretty wild.
To talk about Tim Roth.
Yeah.
I think he is he is acting his freaking heart out.
He's locked in.
He is so locked.
He's great.
Like, I think he's great in this movie.
I honestly, like, everyone except Helena Bonham Carter, like, works.
And Mark.
You know, like, Michael Clark Duncan isn't doing a lot, but, you know, him as a gorilla just makes sense.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, Tim Roth is doing great work. Paul Giamatti is perfect for that. It's great.
Got me in the orangutan suit.
I'm in an orangutan suit now.
Yeah, so here's what the movie attempts to do. It attempts to set up this like animal rights kind of issue thing where like Helena Bonham Carter is going.
Yeah, but it's half-assed. They don't.
Exactly. She's going around and like trying to free humans.
But only the cute ones.
Yeah.
Honestly, because she's like attracted to him.
And there's just
and
nothing.
She just looks
it doesn't
like,
go there all the way with
different.
It.
And it's like, yeah, you're just attracted to him. because there's nothing different about him other than the outfit he's wearing, and he talks, but so does everyone else, so that's not unique.
Yeah, it's so strange. Yeah,
the answer is so simple. Like, the answer is literally she's just like, there's something different about him, or you, or I don't even remember if she says it. It's like, yeah, he's from the fucking future. He's like, yeah, I'm not from here. I'm from another planet. That's what's different about me.
You know, that brings up another point that this movie does poorly. And I mean, this is the really hard thing about remaking a movie, because it's like, how much do you want them to remake it and how much do you want them to tell something new?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the balance you have to find. But in this movie, he shows up and he's like, oh, okay, I'm in a swamp. Oh, okay, these monkeys got me. Okay, I'm in a jail. He's never like, what is going on? These monkeys are ruling us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm imprisoned by a gorilla man that just spoke to me.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems like a complete waste of Mark Wahlberg, because he has a great, like, what the hell is going on face. Like,
yeah.
Just this, like, he's got the eyes of just a madman of just like, what is happening?
These
like,
plants, what are they doing?
But he doesn't, they don't lean into it at all. It's just like, I gotta get out of here.
It's
leaving. Yeah, just, I gotta get back to my ship.
Yeah, I just don't understand why they did
that. He's on Earth.
I mean, he acts as if he's like, oh, yeah, this is another day at the office. Well, I just got to punch it in, get to 5 o'clock, and then we're good.
Yeah.
Are they on Earth, though?
Well, I guess that's a good question if they are, because even the thing later in the movie when he finds out that his whole crew died and everything, and it's like,
yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean that this is Earth.
Yeah, I guess not.
You know what I mean?
I guess so. I mean, the revelation at the end of the movie.
No, you're right. I do, but it's... Yeah, I guess that's why that's a big issue that I have. I understand where they've kind of changed the remake, and story-wise, that's how they've changed how he discovers that he is on Earth or whatever happened. But it's less impactful that it's not a major monument. Or, you know, it's not something we all recognize.
Yeah, wait, what is it?
Well, just when he finds the ship.
Oh, yeah,
it's just
yeah.
not as impactful.
Yeah.
But again, how do you recreate it from the first movie instead of just doing it literally?
Well, I don't know. I don't
well,
know.
You could
do something like have mutants in your movie, for example. Or you could do something like making a metaphor about the policing in America. Or you could have, I don't know, a battle for the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
It's so crazy because each of the, you know, I don't know if you've seen all of the original five movies.
No, but, I've only seen the one. I've never seen even any of the new ones, like the motion capture ones either. I've like Apes is kind of like a blind franchise for me. I don't really know much.
Okay.
About it.
Well,
we've loved every single one up until now. They're all
and they have like very distinct things to say. I mean, 2 and 5, I can see people not liking them, but I thought there was too much interesting stuff in them to dismiss them. And then you have a movie like Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, which is literally this metaphor for like policing and like the prison system. And it's, I think it's better than the first movie. Like it's just great. And so when you see that potential and then you get to this and it's like, yeah, we're kind of doing this animal rights thing, but not all the way. And then we're kind of doing this.
Design some stuff, you know.
We're doing this messiah complex thing later in the movie, but we don't do anything with that. And
what the hell do you want from us? Tim Burton is going to draw the treehouses. I'm sick of having this conversation, guys.
Enough said.
Okay, so I mean they escape, right? There's a whole sequence where they're escaping.
Sure.
And there's like
Christopherson stays.
Yeah, there's a guy putting on a toupee.
Oh yeah, that's a weird escaping montage.
There's a mating ritual happening in one with Lisa Marie and the guy from Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
That's the Glenn Shadix. Yeah, he's
yeah.
Rest in peace also. That's the thing you can blame Tim Burton for.
Yeah.
Like that weirdness right there is only Tim Burton weirdness.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. And it is one of the more interesting scenes of the movie. So
he designed well, I guess that bed. It depends he designed on how that you bed. Feel about it. Yeah. And the moves that she does.
Yeah. So yeah, then they like, you know, why'd you help me? Because you're not usual. They declare martial law. You know, there's really not much to this plot. That's why I'm kind of just like skipping whole details because it's also just boring.
Well,
it's
also
about.
Just, yeah, it's a boring story. And it's just lame to me that, that Thade/Tim Roth is like,
cool name though. I'll give him that.
And rhymes this with is Blade. Not a knock against the performance. It's not against the character that he's just like always been into HBC and is like, I need you to be mine. I'm in love with you. Please like be with me. And it's like, we don't need to add this to it either.
Yeah.
That's another element that makes it feel like a kid. That's Gaston right there. Like,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
a kid's movie stuff.
Yeah.
Your take almost works, Jeremy.
It almost works if it wasn't just so freaking boring. But then, like I said, like it's a live action Disney movie. And a lot of those are like, what? This is boring. It's,
yeah.
I saw Beauty and the Beast.
When you said you had a take coming in, I was kind of like, you know, I'm like excited to have you on. And I'm like, that's interesting. But as we're watching it, I'm like, you know, Batman v Superman, as frustrating as that movie, like as frustrated as that movie is to me, like there's so many elements where I'm like, I see where you could have gone with that though, or whatever. So when you brought your take to it, it's like, okay, that's cool. That does reframe the movie. That's interesting. Whereas this movie is just like, when you were talking about that, you have a take. I'm like, I don't know if there's any take that could do it. So
yeah, no,
I do like the take, but it doesn't make it like, well, oh, I'm going to watch it again to reframe it.
Like BVS, it's not going to save the movie for you, but it could reframe a couple things.
Oh man, that's so
but like
funny.
I said, you know, as I was watching it, I was just like, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I must have been really desperate to defend that movie just as a Tim Burton fan.
Yeah.
Have there been any movies like that, Jordan, for you where you were like, I love this movie unabashedly, and you defended it, and then you watched it later and you were like, oh, this is bad.
Oh, I'm sure. I just not off the top of my head. Yeah. I don't know.
I can't think of one either.
And then every once in a while you think of a movie, it's like, I haven't seen that since I was a kid. Probably should keep it that way.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen The Frighteners with Michael J. Fox?
No.
I think Peter Jackson directed it, honestly.
That sounds right, yeah.
From 1990. He plays like this guy who like can see ghosts and is like friends with a few ghosts. So he runs like this scam business where like the ghosts will go haunt people's house and then he'll go in and like expel them. And then it becomes this other thing. Where was I going with that? Why did I? Oh, because that's the movie for me. That another one where I'm like, I was such a big fan of that movie. And I was just like really excited one year to show my wife. I was like, no, this you're going to enjoy this. This is a cool movie. Like, we'll watch it for like around Halloween. And like 15 minutes in, she's just like falling asleep. And I'm just like, yeah, I get it. It's not working for me as much anymore.
Yeah, I guess I would say probably Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland. Because when when I watched it with you, it was your first time, and I probably hadn't seen it since high school. And it was
and you were probably like it's actually
know,
pretty good.
Like
don't
it,
worry about
but
it.
But yeah, it'll be fun. You know, there's colors and stuff and whatever. No, it's not good.
The one that pops into my head, and I'm still like, no, it's got to be good though. Was as a kid we watched Harry and the Hendersons all the time. And so I was one time at my Aunt Robin's, and I think I was in high school, and we had like just bought the DVD, and I brought it up and I'm like, oh, you haven't seen this? Because I just had like a stack of DVDs with me that I took anytime I went on vacation.
It's you.
And so I was like, oh, let's watch it. And as it was going on, like watching it with someone who hadn't seen it and was an adult, I was like, I remember it being like funnier than this.
There's nothing more embarrassing.
Yeah, I'd like to think that it's still good, but it probably just isn't a good movie. That's probably it.
Yeah.
I also was a fan of the movie as a kid, but I haven't seen that in probably at least 30 years.
Well, show it to your kids and see what happens.
Yeah. It's like, this is John Lithgow. he's doing some big stuff right now, isn't he?
What's the, oh yeah. And here's the other question that I'm having trouble thinking of is what are some remakes that are good? Oh, A Star Is Born.
Okay.
Although I haven't seen
the Dawn
of the
Dead remake is good. I've never seen it. I don't know.
Okay. But are those Zack Snyder fans or are those normal people?
It could be the James Gunn fans. Didn't he write that one?
Oh yeah. Oh, it's probably good.
There have been some good remakes. We were just talking, I was listening to another episode of mine where we're just like, we just kind of addressed of like, there's certain movies that should be remade just to bring them to a new audience.
Yeah.
Who just won't watch a movie that's, you know, over a certain age, but like, you can argue why remake them. It's like, well, for that reason. So somebody can actually like experience the story, but that's a situation where you do want to like follow the original as closely as you can.
Yeah.
Even if it means repeating it, like you're doing that for the benefit of a different audience. But yeah, I mean, there's been so many remakes that it's weird that because there's so many, the good ones should stand out. But yeah, instead, the inverse happens where I'm just like, there's so many bad ones that I can't even think of the good ones because they're buried under so much garbage.
Yeah.
I did just think of Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, yeah. The Frank Oz movies, way better than the old. Although that is based on a play, right? That was based on the...
Yeah, it's an adaptation.
Frank Oz one's based on the play. Oh, okay.
I think so. I don't think they did that first. Okay.
No, it was an off-Broadway play.
Okay. That's right.
I did the show. I played Seymour in high school.
Which character is that?
That's Rick.
The main guy?
Rick.
Whoa.
Ray, the main character. Yeah.
Holy cow.
I can't sing for shit, but I was nerdy enough that they were like, yep, you're a good enough actor that you could. That,
wow.
I guess they called me an actor back then.
You yeah, there we go.
I was like, nobody ever refers to me as an actor.
they're doing that at a local, in Ashland theater that we're going to go see.
Yeah. I'm so very excited. I think they built Audrey too, so that should be cool.
Yeah.
Another remake, which is kind of in that same vein, and I'm not necessarily saying it's better, but West Side Story, Steven Spielberg.
Okay.
Knocked it out of the park with that. Yeah. So you know, there are examples. There are things that are good. So Burton, maybe you could have done better with your scheduling, and made a better movie, huh? Yeah, they attack a camp, and they swim across water.
Well, they escape, and they go back to Mark Wahlberg's ship that crash landed, and he gets his stuff, and he has a tracker, and he's like, I'm sending out a signal, and they're following it to make contact with his crew to be saved.
Yeah.
And he can save everybody.
And then he finds the ship. We find out that the apes came from that ship. Now, that's a thing that I think is interesting.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like, okay, cool. It's like, that's maybe the hook of this movie.
Well, the only thing that's really said is HBC is like, well, if you never came here, we wouldn't be here.
Because
they came to find Mark Wahlberg.
Yep.
That's all that's said on the matter.
That's it. What's going on?
So my question is...
There's just nothing there. There's no meat. Just sucking on a stew with a bone. That's it. A stew bone.
Okay, I'm smart.
bone stew.
Bone stew.
So later on...
It's an Irish delicacy.
Later on, it's just jumping a lot, but after the big battle happens, and Pericles shows up, and the apes are like, oh, it's our savior, Pericles. And it's like, what? How does this work? They never talked about a prophecy, right?
No, they didn't. That was okay. I wrote monkey saves them. The prophecy is true. He came back. Prophecy they never spoke of. so I mean that's
so a, they do say, don't they know that like this ape named Pericles is like the reason?
No, that Seymour or something.
Not
Skinner.
Seymour.
can you do that guy? Seymour?
Who?
So can you do Seymour yelling Skinner?
You mean Superintendent Chalmers?
Oh, yelling Chalmers, yeah.
Oh, Seymour!
Wow, that's good.
I love it. I never tried them.
Yeah, with a little work, you got that.
He has notes.
I'll leave it to Hank Azaria.
Come for his job. Okay, no, so it's just, yeah, they bring up this prophecy. The monkey shows up. And meanwhile, before this, Mark Wahlberg, he does this really condescending speech to the humans to inspire them. And I'm like, this is just the wrong guy to do this. He's so condescending to any other person in the room.
What does he say?
It's his face. It's his face, and now he's delivering the lines. It's like, this guy wants to beat you up.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed a lot of Mark Wahlberg movies, but when he is cast incorrectly, it is a tough, tough watch.
Yeah. True.
So the monkey comes, saves him, and then he flies home. I mean, is that okay? Am I skipping over things that we want to talk about him?
Did the monkey die?
No, he just stayed. They just leave him there.
They just left the monkey there,
right? He just leaves the monkey there. Like, why would... How... He has no way of communicating with them. He doesn't speak.
No. Yeah. That's
weird. I mean,
weird. He
probably knows some sign language that the apes don't know.
Yeah.
And he knows how to work the sequence on the AirPod, but like they don't have an AirPod. What is he going to do there? I was baffled by that decision.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Why is he there? Why? How did he save you? How is he the savior?
It's really not him. It's the ship that saved. Because
it's just baffling. That's all I have to say before we get to the end. I think I've covered everything that I wanted to talk about before that, but I don't want to blow over anything that you two wanted to discuss.
I'll just say that I'm sorry. I don't mean to jump in. The idea of this war that could happen. And then it's like, just blow them all away with like a blowtorch, like Kevin McAllister them out of the, it's just like, we could have seen a really epic battle, but I guess they couldn't get everybody. All the makeup didn't work for everybody.
Yeah.
But instead just blast them.
Yeah. It does. This movie does feel like during this time you did have to have a big battle scene, kind of like what we got in this movie.
Yeah.
But it's not well choreographed, and it's just a bunch of people with like foam things just hitting people. But I just felt like that's what you did back then.
Yeah. Well, and later this year, we will go to the Mines of Moria and, Helm's Deep will be a year later.
But then, so you have all these humans who live in like other villages, presumably like hiding away from the apes.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw none of that kind of system and how that worked.
Mm-mm.
And you have General Thade, who wants to eradicate humans.
Who's acting his heart out, yes.
But we're not talking about Tim Roth. and there's we don't really see him like do any of that. He's just mean.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. He doesn't really do anything evil in the movie. Well, he does kill two gorillas. But
yeah,
man. But then what happens in this movie? I don't even think Thade dies. No, he definitely doesn't because of what I'm about to explain.
No, but he just is cowering under the thing, shaking.
Mark Wahlberg finds the wormhole and he's like, I'm going to go back. And he starts flying through and he comes out of it and we see...
He doesn't go back though. Does he go forward?
Well, he does go forward in time, but he's thinking he's going back.
Okay.
And he sees the Washington Monument. He crashes at the steps of the Abraham Lincoln statue and he walks up to it and we see, and I think this is a bad decision, but I do like that we get to see Abraham Lincoln. And I know I'm not the first person to make that joke, but
it's as we were talking last night about it, where it's like, I think someone just said the name Abraham Lincoln. And before anyone really thought further, they were like, that would be so cool. Let's do it.
Yeah. And see, and I'm not the type of person that usually gets hung up on this stuff, but this is the twist of the movie. This is the end. This is like, you know, Bruce Willis says he's a ghost, and you're like, but the movie didn't show any of that, if that was the case. You know, you get stuck in this cycle. So this, it's General Thade, and it says, like, long live General Thade, and he looks like Abraham Lincoln. He has the beard and everything, and he's in the statue. What does this mean? What does this mean about the society? And they have the Washington Monument. So did they follow our exact human history? Did they have, like, the 13th Amendment that they had to either get rid of or add? I can't remember. Did General Sherman come down and his guns, you know, destroyed Atlanta? Was there a George Washington, a monkey? Like, my brain just explodes because I don't know how this is possible or what it means. Like, you know, all these other drafts they talked about, like the Renaissance, or they talked about, you know, like the Roman times. I imagine that those movies wouldn't, like, actually have the exact setup. They would be like, it's inspired by that. It's like their Roman Empire, but we're going to make it a little different. Mm. I mean, maybe they would have done that, but this movie, it's just, like, baffling to me. And that's not even to mention that they have, like, the same police cars and, like, the same costumes as like
costumes. Police costumes.
Yeah, you know, police costumes that they all wear. And that part I can actually get on board with, and it's like my mind doesn't even ask questions. But it's Abraham Lincoln. Is he the 13th president? Is there a United States?
Isn't he the 16th?
I mean, what else has changed? It is 16. You're right. Okay. I mean, was he assassinated by, like, John Apes Booth or something? Like, my mind explodes during this.
It's going to be okay. I have no answers for you.
It doesn't make any sense.
I think you're overthinking it, honestly. Like, I think you're thinking too much about it. Yeah, I don't know. I can't answer it for you. I never, like, the ending, I don't bump up against the ending as much as everyone else does, I guess.
Well, like, this is a bit dour, and of course this couldn't have happened at the time this movie came out, but it would be like if you saw this movie and he goes to New York City and he walks up and sees, like, the monument to the two towers, and you'd be like, so the terrorist attack happened to the apes too? Was it ape terrorists? Was it, like...
I mean,
I don't get it.
It's a monument of Thade, you know, like, I think the fact that he's got the little beard and looks more like Lincoln is just kind of a joke, but like, so it's like,
but the Washington Monument's in the background too. That implies that there was a George Washington.
Implies that somebody got a monument that looks like the George Washington Monument. Because I don't look at this ending and think, like, oh, but what happened to actual Abraham Lincoln? There is no Abraham Lincoln. It's just they built a monument of Thade that just happened to look exactly like the Lincoln Memorial.
I mean, Jeremy, I thought you'd be here with me on this. I really was counting on that. But you're giving the movie, like, credit on this?
It's not that I'm giving it credit. It's that I don't have as many questions as you about, like, what happened to Lincoln and Washington and stuff. I just, like, I don't know. They evolved, and, like, shut up, Micah. Don't worry about it.
I read
a stupid thing of, like, I don't, this
okay,
is
okay. Like some a, like a dumb ending idea explained thing
about, like, so the idea of the whole wormhole situation, and also the idea that Mark Wahlberg thinks, I'll find that exact same wormhole
and
I'll come through and I'll be fine. It works exactly like a door. I'll go backwards. So the idea, like, Pericles goes into that first storm and then Mark Wahlberg goes after him. And so the idea is that the earlier you go into the storm, the further in time you get. So the idea is Pericles went in first, Mark Wahlberg goes in second. Presumably, at some point in time, Thade goes through. I'm losing my own mind, actually, just trying to explain what I'm thinking. So when Pericles comes back, that's because he went into the thing first.
Yeah.
So he comes out of the wormhole at a later point
on this
planet. So the idea that Thade went into a wormhole much later than Mark Wahlberg would bring him even further back in time of the planet that he arrives on.
So it's
stupid, like, the sooner you go in, the later you arrive in time. It's
so are you saying Thade goes and he goes before anything ever happened and changes our human history before the Planet of the Apes?
Yes, that's the idea. Okay, that Thade has gone through the wormhole and has gone so much further back in time that he is responsible for the ape uprising on Earth, which is why I don't think that this actual planet is supposed to be Earth. I think it's a literal Planet of the Apes, and then he comes to Earth at some point in our past history and, you know, wipes out humanity, and then they become the ape society that eventually grows to build a Washington Monument to whomever they feel deserves a monument.
Well, see, that would make more sense if he showed up and he's like, let's convert this. And then I love this Abraham Lincoln statue, and I'd love for you guys to just remake it as me, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
But I mean, none of that is in the movie.
All I'm thinking about is you said uprising, and you should have said ape rising.
That's all you're thinking. Your brain is stuck. Ape rising.
There's literally no explanation for how Thade would have gone, like, would have gotten out of being trapped in that, like, cowering. You know, where he was.
Yeah, you're right. So he, like,
It's just, we have to assume, based on what happens, that Thade somehow escaped, went back in time. Clearly they're going to get a sequel. They'll explain it in the next one.
How come there was no sequel? It made a lot of money.
I think they just kind of decide. I mean, I would imagine that, yes, this movie made
but
a good amount of money.
So much money.
But no, not even that. I think that the people just did not like the movie. So they're like, let's just not.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, there was a time where Hollywood said, hey, you know what? Critics didn't like this. Even though it made a lot of money, we probably shouldn't proceed.
Wow.
Well, they did. It's the classic Tomb Raider trap that I've heard a box office guy talk about, which is like, the first movie's terrible, but it makes a ton of money. And so they decide, let's make a second one. And the second one is actually good. But everyone is like, they were burned that they didn't see it. And it's like the studio didn't realize, like, they just shouldn't have made the second one, you know? There's some other examples too. It's a classic. It happens sometimes where the first one's so bad, but there's like a fan base for it.
Yeah.
And then the next time they're like, fool me once, not happening again.
Yeah.
So, I don't get this movie, and it's bad.
There's nothing to get. It's like, there's no point to it. It's flimsy. It doesn't work. Even as a live action adaptation of a Disney movie that didn't exist.
Agreed.
Well, and it's sad because we've gone 5 for 5 on our Planet of the Apes.
But we knew this wasn't going to be.
I know.
We knew. We've seen it.
But now we do get to Rise, a movie I've never seen.
I've seen the ones.
And we get a Dawn, a movie I've never seen.
Mm-hmm.
We get a War, a movie I've never seen.
How do you remember?
And then finally, we get to Kingdom.
How do you remember the titles?
Oh, I got these things locked down. You got Planet, Beneath, Escape, Conquest, Battle, Planet, Rise, Dawn, War.
Now
Kingdom.
Name all the TV movies that they had from the old show that there was like a Planet of the Apes show.
Yeah.
And then like they would like just bundle episodes together and be like, it's a new movie on TV.
Oh, the good old days. So, yeah, if we have nothing left on Planet of the Apes, Jeremy.
No, got nothing.
Then tell us what you want to plug while I look up our schedule.
Oh, gosh. We're not as active anymore. But, yeah, monthly we release our 90 over 90 episodes on our original 90 under 90 feed. You can still get all of the old 90 under 90 episodes. They're all available for free. And they're all on there. And we started releasing all of our old Patreon content on the main feed. And so we are still continuing our over 90. We still just record it monthly. And starting in the month of May, I'm going to start releasing the backlog of those episodes. So that'll be, you know, we'll have a new one and an old one every month in addition to all the other stuff that I'm going to eventually put up there.
Great.
And yeah, you know, Dan's got a movie that he's working on. I don't know when it'll be finished, but
yeah, it'll be cool when it happens. For us, it's still the month of April when this episode comes out. And T2 Trainspotting is what you can download on Patreon, which I think we did an excellent job with that.
Yeah.
And then next week on Wednesday, we come out with our Blade Runner episode. And that is an episode, again, I'm going to tell you folks, I've done more research for that episode than I've done for any episode we've ever done.
So please do us the kindness.
And sign up for Patreon.
Yeah.
And get us.
Did I do it? No.
Yeah, get us to 4,000 patrons so we can just quit our jobs and do this. How about that? That would be the number we need, 4,000.
You've done the math?
No, I'm just assuming that that's probably enough. Okay. Look, you know what? Let's make it an even 10. 10,000 patrons. I know we don't even get that many listens an episode, but let's get 10,000 patrons and let's quit our jobs and let's hire Jeremy and Dan to host a podcast with us on Patreon.
Great.
Whatever celebrity guest you want to have on, I'll work on an impression. And yeah,
there
I'll
just... we go.
Wonderful. Wonderful. No, thank you for listening though. Next week it is Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Can you give us a goodbye that Paul Giamatti
do? Oh, yeah. Hey, bye-bye. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
No. From Paul Giamatti, though. That's what I want.
I started speaking to you. Which Paul Giamatti do you want?
Maybe. Right,
I'm gonna go shoot him up, Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, shoot him up.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show, and I'd be happy to come back some other time.
I got nothing, man. I love it.
Thanks for listening, folks.